Morning. Today's daf in Nazir is Samech Hay. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is known as the Echnish Masliba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We start today, we should be starting today at the Mishnah. We just have one point to cover from yesterday, which we're going to finish up right now. And then we're going to move on to the next Mishnah and the second to last daf of the Masechta. Tomorrow, we finish Masechta Nazir. And that puts us on schedule for Wednesday to start Masechta Sota. The point that we made yesterday is that when you are done with your Tahara from Tumas Meis, so the process requires a 7-day period in which on day 3 and 7 you get sprinkled with the Paraduma, the Afer Paraduma mixed in with the Mayim Chaim, and then on day 7 after having been sprinkled with the Afer of the Paraduma, so then you tovel in the mikvah. After toveling in the mikvah, you wait till Harav Shemesh, you wait till nightfall, and then nightfall you are Tahor, Tahor Lagamri. The point the Gemara made yesterday is that between your tefillah in the mikvah and the evening, so that's the period in time which we refer to consistently as Tful Yom. Tful Yom just basically means now that you are still tameh, but with only a residual tuma, and nothing is left for you to do except for just simply wait. Wait until the evening, and then you'll be tahor. The Gemara says that in terms of a halacha, even though you're still tameh, and the degree of tuma may get knocked down a little bit, even though you're tameh, but for some areas in halacha, you're finished. You're finished with your tahara process. Now again, when I say that, I'm saying it in context, not out of context. Out of context, it doesn't make sense. And out of context, you're not tahor until the evening. But in this context, you are basically done. And that is that as far as the halacha of tumas hatahom is concerned, remember we discussed where if a person gets exposed to tumah, but nobody knew about the tumah at the time. In other words, obviously, if somebody knew about it, so then there's nothing to talk about. But nobody knew about the tumah at the time, and the tumah was in a situation in which nobody was expected to know about it. So that's what's referred to as tumas hatahom. And what we learned together is that for Karm Pesach and for the halachas of Nazir, it's not going to affect you. It's not going to influence you. And the Gemara said, Rav Hamruna made a comment yesterday's daf, which is that as it relates to Karm Pesach, so if you expose yourself to this tumas hatahom on the seventh day, after sprinkling of the paraduma, after toveling in the mikvah, where all that's left to do is just simply wait until Harav Shemesh, so Rav Hamanuna says you're done, you're good. You can go ahead and you can have somebody bring the Karban Pesach on your behalf, enjoy Karban Pesach. It's fine, it's not going to affect your Karban Pesach. What about the fact that there's Harav Shemesh? So the Gemara's expression yesterday was Shimsha mi meila arva. That's going to happen, meaning there's nothing that you need to do. It's going to happen on its own, and so therefore for this particular halacha, it's considered like you're done. You're done with your tahara. That brought us to this point in the Gemara. Abaye originally balked at this suggestion, but then the Gemara points out that Abaye came around and Abaye commented on another Mishnah, on another Braisa, which clearly indicates that he came around on this point as well. And that's the only thing we're going to be doing from a remnant of yesterday's daf, and then we'll continue with today's daf. So we're going to see this inside. V'af Abaye Hadarbe. Abaye also recanted, meaning Abaye basically came around on this point. And the Tanya, the Gemara here, quotes the following Braisa. Now, in order to understand this Braisa, just a quick refresher, crash course in Tumas Yoledes. A woman gives birth, so a woman is Tameya. Now, I'm going to just use the example of her giving birth to a girl, for reasons which either will be abundantly clear, or if not, doesn't matter. It only works if she has a girl. So if she gives birth to a girl, so she is Tameya for 14 days. And then after the Tumah period of 14 days, she tovels in the mikvah. And then she's Tahora for 66 days. Major disclaimer, we don't follow these numbers anymore. That goes back to the period of the Gaonim, where we don't follow these numbers anymore. We treat a woman who has given birth as always being Tameya, unless she tovels in the mikvah, she's not bleeding, but okay, just a disclaimer. But without the disclaimer, I'm just going back to the halachas as laid down in the Torah. So she's tamei for 14 days, she tovels in the mikvah, and for the next 66 days, bleeding or not, she's tahora, she's perfectly, she's in a state of, I don't want to say purity, because that's not perfectly true. She can't go into the base of mikdash, she can't eat karbanos, but to her husband, she's muteris. She will be permitted to her husband until day 80. After day 80 comes around, meaning on day 80, 81. So she tovels in the mikvah, and she'll bring karbanos, and that will conclude her tumas hayoledes. Okay, so that's the halacha as it relates to a woman who's given birth to a girl. Now, it's possible, unlikely, but at least it's within the realm of possibility, that a woman during those 66 days can both become pregnant again and can miscarry within those 66 days. And the reason why we're not choosing the birth of a boy, her first child being a boy, is because there the numbers are only 733. It's certainly possible for a woman to become pregnant within those 33 days, but not to miscarry a viable fetus. Viable fetus has to be a minimum of a 40-day fetus. Anything less than 40 days is not considered a fetus at all. It's what the Gemara refers to as Maya Ba'alma. So we need a minimum of a 40-day gestation. That's why we're going to have the example of a woman where her first child was a girl. So her first child was a girl, then she became pregnant during the 66 days, and she miscarried within those 66 days. Here's the halacha. The halacha is that because she miscarried within her birth of the first child, so therefore she only needs to bring one carbon yoledes for both. Because this new pregnancy, this second pregnancy, and unfortunately the miscarriage of the second pregnancy, because it was enveloped within the first, so therefore she does not have to bring a new carbon. That's the halacha. That's just the starting point for the discussion. Where the discussion takes us is the next step. Okay, so let's say that she miscarries within the first Tumas Yoledes. So in other words, baby number one, she then is Tamei for 14 days, Tovas in the mikvah, and then within the next 66 days, she becomes pregnant again. She miscarries within those 66 days. So, and now, she's now going to have to wait until, that was a Leda, she's going to have to wait, and within now, the next 66 days, let's say once again she got pregnant and she miscarried. Okay, so just to throw out a couple of numbers, so let's say the miscarriage, I'm just throwing out numbers, let's say the miscarriage after her quote unquote regular birth, she miscarried 75 days later, and then she miscarried another 75 days later after that. Her second miscarriage, obviously, is not within the malos of her first birth. The first miscarriage was within the malos of the first birth. The second miscarriage was not within the malos of the first birth. And the question on the table is going to be a very clinical question, which is, how many karbanos does she need to bring? One set of karbanos or two sets of karbanos? So that's what we're going to be seeing together inside. Ditanya, we learned in a braisa. Yom malos tavi, toch malos lo savi. If she has a miscarriage on the yom hamalos, meaning after she counted her 80 days, then and only then, on day 81, she had a miscarriage, so that requires a new set of karbanos. However, toch malos, but if it's within the malos, so lo savi, so she does not need to bring another set of karbanos. Yachol lo savi al leida shelefnei malos, aval tavi al leida shelachem malos, vitipater mishteyem tamalomer uvam los yemei tara. Biyom malos tavi, toch malos lo savi. And then the Braisa seems to repeat itself, but as Tosfos points out, as all the Mefarshim point out, what the Braisa here is addressing is exactly the scenario that I just painted, in which she had a miscarriage within the Malos, and then she had a second miscarriage within the Malos of the first miscarriage, but not within the Malos of the first of the original baby, of the original girl. So the Braisa's point is that she only needs to bring one set of karbanos. Why? I'm Rav Kahana. So on this, Rav Kahana says, Shani Hacha de Mechasa Karban. And Rav Kahana's explanation is, I'll tell you why. Because she hasn't yet been able, she had no opportunity to bring a karban from her first birth. Meaning from the first birth, she was just simply unable to bring a karban. What happened after the first birth? She had a miscarriage within the first 80 days. So because she had a miscarriage, now she's going to have to wait another 80 days. So she simply did not have an opportunity to bring a karban. So therefore, explains Rav Kahana, that's why after the second miscarriage, that also is considered part of the first miscarriage, because she never had an opportunity to bring karbanos. Once she was given an opportunity to bring karbanos, then any miscarriage after that is considered a new miscarriage in the context of karbanos, and so therefore she would have to bring a second set of karbanos. But here, even though the second miscarriage comes 150 days later after the original birth of the girl, but because she never had an opportunity to bring karbanos, so therefore everything can be covered within one set of karbanos. Okay, I understood that part is complicated, but if you understood that, that's great. And then all this just to get to this one line of Gemara. So Hasanami Mechaser Harav Shemesh. So the Gemara says now she is still Mechuser. She's still lacking in Harav Shemesh. So isn't that considered? And it, why is Rav Kahana focusing on the karban? Meaning Rav Kahana's basic point is that incomplete. And she, and everything is enveloped within one set of karbanos because she never had an opportunity to bring karbanos. Why didn't Rav Kahana make a very simple point? And that is Harav Shemesh. Meaning she still has to wait until the nightfall after the 80th day. Why didn't he say that? So Amalei Abayi, Shem Shamemel Arva. So Abayi says because Harav Shemesh is not something which is mechusar. It's not lacking. It doesn't require anything. All you need to do is just simply wait. Okay, so that's what we were waiting for. We were waiting for Abayi to say that line, that Mechuster Shemesh is just Mimela. It comes automatically, it's not something that person has to do. Okay, that's, and now we saw that Abayi came around on this idea that Harav Shemesh is not considered an action point that is going to hold you back. Bringing us now to today's daf. Today's daf is Samechei Nazir, and we start with the Mishnah on the bottom of Samech Dalam and Beis. And what are we doing now in the Masechta? We are going off on a tangent. Okay, the ninth parak, as I mentioned at the beginning of the ninth parak, so an assortment of halachas, some of them relevant to Nazir. In fact, the first Mishnah was totally relevant to Nazir, with a very general discussion of who can be a Nazir, who cannot be a Nazir. A goy cannot become a Nazir, an Eved Kenani can become a Nazir. And then we went on to discuss in the Mishnayos a couple of halachas related to the Eved Kenani becoming a Nazir. The fugitive Eved Kenani, can he start serving out his Naziris? And now we go off on a tangent in this next Mishnah on Samech Talmud Beis, where we are off track. And the reason why we're going to go off track is because in the last Mishnah that we did together, so the last Mishnah ended with the words Raglaim Ladavar, meaning the last Mishnah, which was on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, talked about the special halacha of Tumas HaTahom, and Tumas HaTahom is only going to work if you did not have a Cheskas Tumah. But if you had a Cheskas Tumah, so then we don't apply the special halacha of Tumas HaTahom. And the last words of the previous Mishnah on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph was Raglaim Ladavar. We have our suspicions. So now the Gemara is going to use that terminology, and since it's the same terminology, so therefore this Mishnah gets lumped together. The Mishnah starts off, Hamotzi Meis B'Tchila. If a person finds a dead body for the very first time, Mushkav Kedarko, lying as a person normally lies when being buried, meaning Jewish burial. Okay, so Chever Kedisha, which has been Minag Yisrael for part and parcel of the Masorah, is that you have a Jewish burial, and Jewish burial, very simply, is you take the body, you prepare the body for burial, you dress the body in tachrichin, and you lay the body in the ground. And it's really, it's uncomplicated. And there are details, obviously, but it's very uncomplicated. And the way that the body's laid in the ground, the way body's laid to rest, is in a perfectly straight horizontal position. Okay. And so there are certain basic indications and clues that this body that's being buried is a Jewish body. So you find this body in the ground for the first time. Mushkav Kedarko. And that's what the Mishnah means when the Mishnah says Mushkav Kedarko. It's lying in the usual horizontal position facing up. So no low, so you take it out. Ve'ez tefusa so. And you also take out the tefusa as well. Tefusa is a term which we're going to discuss in the Gemara, but you take the body out. Now, take a look at Tosfos over here. Note low. Take the body out of the ground. First of all, betchila. We'll go back to Tosfosim. Short Tosfos. So shalo no daloki kaver sham bekever. Okay. Nobody knew that there was a burial spot over here. Nobody knew that this was a burial plot. So because nobody knew about it, so therefore we have the right to take it out of the ground. Why? Now let's take a look at not the next Tosfos, but the Tosfos of Notlo. Notlo said, Tosfos, why are we taking it out of the ground? Nihi de kevra yadu amin beperk nigmar din, also lift no so. Tosfos quotes the sixth parak of Sanhedrin, where the Gemara over there says that if you know that this was a burial plot, a Jewish burial plot. You have absolutely no right to dig the body up and reinter it somewhere else. There are circumstances, there are extenuating circumstances. Obviously, kavod ames is a consideration, but we're just now talking about the basic halacha. The basic halacha is that if an area was designated as a Jewish burial plot, that's it. The body is there, and you have no right to move it. So, also lifno so hasam hu dafka bishano debaladas shinisha kavasha. In other words, that means that the person intentionally wanted to be buried there. Ava, however, Tosfos goes on to say, Benimsa, if over here, what did? We found the body buried. Nobody knew about it. Circumstantial evidence gives us the idea that it's a Jewish body, the positioning of the body, the way the body is laid to rest. But we just didn't know about it. So, Hasa Mutter Litlo. So Tosfos says that here's the assumption we're going to be working with. Nobody knew about it. And most probably, Nachon Lomar, Kil Ekrai Nikbar Sham. So Tosfos makes the argument that because nobody knew about it, so probably that was only meant as a temporary resting spot. And that was not meant as a permanent resting spot. If people knew about it, so then obviously the intent was to use that spot as a final resting spot. But if nobody knew about it, so that leads us enough clues, so to say, to make the argument that this is only temporary, giving us the right to dig the body up and reinter it somewhere else. The word tfusa, that we're going to wait till the Gemara to discuss, but basically the idea is that when you dig the body up, so you want to make sure that you get all the body. So what you're going to do is you're going to take some dirt together with it. That's the basic idea of tfusa. More of that is going to be discussed in the Gemara. Shnayim nolan v'tfusa son. If you find two bodies lying next to one another, so you dig the two bodies up, and also tfusa, again, take enough earth and dirt in order to make sure that you have the entire body. Three. That brings us to the next point. Matza shlosha. Now, if you find three, im yesh bein zeles demidal amos vachmona, harei ze shchunas kvaros. So, if you find now three now is going to, now what you have discovered is a burial plot, a Jewish burial plot. As long as the bodies have been buried within 4 to 8 tfachim of one another. Okay, I'm peeking over. I see in the article he has a fantastic picture, of a Jewish burial spot. This is based on a Gemara in Baba Basra. The burial back then is not exactly the same as what we do nowadays. Back then they were much more apt to bury within caves. In other words, they would go into a cave and they would basically carve out an area in a cave where they would have. They would have almost like a courtyard, if you will. The courtyard was 4 by 8, right? That's the picture you're looking at right now. I'm peeking over. So the courtyard was 4 by 8. And then what they would do is on each side of the courtyard, they would bury 6 bodies on one side of the courtyard, 6 bodies on the other. Basically, I mean, you could do the math. It's not that difficult. It's basically an amma per person, width-wise. And then 3 bodies at the end of the courtyard. It's going to be three bodies buried at the end of this 4 by 8 courtyard. So it's 6 and 6 on each side. It's 3 at the end. So it's basically it's an amma per person, which is the general assumption the Gemara makes in terms of the width of a person. The width of a person is an amma. Obviously, you need room for separation between one body and another body. So it's 6 on one side, 6 on the other side, and 3 at the end of the small corridor. Probably the answer is yes, but not that I know of. But those are the dimensions. And being that those are the dimensions, so now that you know that that's what it looks like. So if you find 3, and now the 3 are within 4 by 8 tfachim of one another. Sorry, I didn't mean tfachim. 4 by 8 amos of one another. So basically now, once again, we're putting together circumstantial evidence, and we're now, it must be, not must be, but it's enough circumstantial evidence for us to indicate that this was probably a Jewish burial plot. It now is starting to look like a Jewish burial plot. It's enough evidence for us to say it was a Jewish burial plot. And therefore, can't touch it. Can't touch it. In other words, at that point in time, when you had one body or two bodies, and it was just randomly, haphazardly buried it somewhere, and nobody knew about it. So now you have the right. Again, according to Tosfos, we can assume that was at Krai Ba'alma. It was just meant to be buried there temporarily. But now that we see that there are three, and they're situated in such a way where we could look at the design, we could look at the pattern. Hey, this is Jewish burial plot, so now we have to leave it as it is. It's right. In other words, basically, it's a chazaka, and that now the area is a zoned area, and it obviously was zoned for burial, and you can't touch it. So midal amas vashmon ares deshkunas kfaras. Bodek emenu lahalan esrin ama matza echeb itself esrin ama bodek emenu lahalan esrin ama shiraglayim ledavar. Okay, and now you check 20 amas from there, and if there's another body, so you check another 20 amas from there, and here we get to the key line of the Mishnah, Sheraglan Ledavar. That's the connection between this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. We're obviously not talking about Hilchas Nazir anymore. We're talking about the halachas of presumption, assumptions that are made, like Danny says, Chazaka, and that's basically what we're talking about over here. Why 20 amas? What's the magic behind 20 amas? Why are we checking 20 amas? So once again, I'm peeking over, I'm looking at the picture in the art scroll. So because back then I described one side of the burial plot. So what they used to do is they had a 4x8, and within the 4x8, so on three of the sides they buried, and then what they had was another basic corridor of 6x6, and then they had another 4x8. And so, and they buried on the other side of the, if you will, the ulam, the main hallway, if you will, of this corridor. If you do the math, by the way, it's at 20 amas, it does not seem to be sufficient, because if I go from one end to the other end, so really what you're going to find is it's really 22 amas, right? It's 8 plus 8, which is 16, plus another 6 as the main ulam, so that's really 22 amas. Okay, Tosfos is bothered by that. Our Mishnah over here says 20 amas, where if you actually put the numbers together, it comes out to 22 amas. Okay, it's a bit of an issue. But right now, just to understand the basic idea of the Mishnah, it's that now that we know that we're dealing with a burial plot, so basically we have to try to imagine, well, where's the other side of the burial plot? So that's why you have to go now in 20 amas in the other direction to see if there is in actuality another side to the burial plot. That's what the Mishnah means. If you find a mace over there 20 amas away, so now you got to start again, and now you have to suspect that maybe 20 amas from there's another burial plot. So you keep looking 20 amas in every direction until you basically no longer find any mason.
Is it a suspicion that he's not in the cave searching? He's from
cut, right? Seems that way. It seems that way. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If it was found for the very first time, so then what happened is that it would have been taken out together with the tfusa, and because now we found three and they're within proximity and they basically matches what a Jewish burial plot would have looked like, so then we have to now have a suspicion that we have uncovered a Jewish burial plot, and that's why we have to make a perimeter search in order to find the other bodies. Adkan Divrei HaMishnah. We start with the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Matza, Prat LaMatzui. So the Mishnah over here, right, Hamotze Meis B'Tchila. So that's an exclusion of Matzui. What does that mean? Perish Ri, going right to Tosfos, third Tosfos on the Amud. Perish Ri, Shim Haya Yadua, Lo Yehei No Lo. In other words, if people knew about this, meaning even though it was one body, but everybody knew, this is where so-and-so was buried. So then that doesn't fit into our Mishnah. Our Mishnah giving us the right to take the body out of the ground and reinter it somewhere else is only if this is the first time we're discovering this body. But if everybody knew about this body being buried over here, so that now has the status of a resting place, a burial spot, even though there aren't other bodies buried around. And so therefore, Rav Yehuda says, teaching us in the Gemara, that you don't have the right to take it out. Mace, Prat Laharug. Okay. This halacha also is only going to be applied if the person died of natural causes. But let's say harug, let's say the person was murdered, so then you do not have the right to, correct. You do not have the right to take the body out. So Tosfos points out, next Tosfos on the Amud, fourth Tosfos down, Prat LaHarug, Kedamrin, and Besamach the Mace, Shechaser Ein Lo Tfusa, Vein Lo Shchunas Kavaras. So, We're going to see in just a moment that if the body is discovered, but there was a limb missing, right, an arm, a leg, something, some extremity of the body is missing, so then you cannot. It's no longer considered a zoned for burial. Now,
the bones.
Huh?
The bones of the arm.
Yeah. Right. In other words, if there was a full decomposition where it's just bones, so I guess that means there was a bone missing. So now Tosfos points out. Now this is not the first time Tosfos said this. If I remember correctly, Tosfos made this point earlier in the Masechta as well. But Tosfos says, really, you have difficulty understanding this part of the Mishnah, or I should say rather this part of the Gemara. Read on in Tosfos. I'm going to do so. Meishe chaster ein lo shchunas kvaros. That if the body is missing a limb, so then it doesn't get. It's not given the status of shchunas kvaros. It's not a burial plot. Tosfos says it's very hard to understand. Kashalavin. Tosfos in a one-liner. Tosfos says it's hard. Lama. V'shema alach lamoshe misinahu. And Tosfos with an inability of understanding, because think about it. If someone was murdered, he deserves a Jewish burial, right? No, he's no different than anyone else. And why should it be now that when you make this discovery of a Jewish burial plot, and it happens to be that one of them is missing a limb, now you're going to say, oh, okay, doesn't have status of Jewish burial plot. Why? Tosfos says it's hard to understand. And the only thing you could suggest, says Tosfos, is that maybe this is a halach lamoshe misinah. Okay. Anyway, and Tosfos, I remember well, Tosfos made this point earlier. Anyway, back to the Gemara. So, Meis prat la'arug, mushkav prat li'yoshev. Okay, like I mentioned back in the Mishnah, right? Traditional burial means that you take the body and you rest it horizontally in the ground, facing up, and prat li'yoshev. Apparently, the minhag of the non-Jews at the time was to have the body situated in a sitting position. Okay, so if you found the body in a sitting position, so you know that gives you the clues to know this is not a Jewish burial. Kedarko prat l'sharosh munach ben yarkosav. Okay, if the head is found between the legs, once again, that's not Jewish burial, and so you can assume that this is not a Jew that you discovered.
The mummies are standing.
Are they in the standing position?
Tani ula bar
chanina meishe chaser ein lo tfusa. If there's a limb, if there's any extremity which is missing, so it doesn't have this halach of tfusa. Again, going back to Tosfos, this is a presumption that they didn't die, but rather was murdered. Didn't die of natural causes, but rather the person was murdered and does not have the halachic benefit of tfusa. And again, why not? Tosfos struggles to understand why. V'lo shchunas kvaros. V'chol ani ma'itam lo arminan dilma ove kochavim hu. And again, the Gemara just simply sums up the point that we just made, and that is that if not buried in the Jewish traditional manner, so therefore you can assume that it's an ove kochavim, and so therefore is not given the same status. Matzah shnayim rosh shoseh betzad maragolosov shoseh v'rosh shoseh betzad maragolosov shoseh ein lam tfusa v'lo shchunas kvaros. If they're buried head to foot, meaning head, foot, then followed by head, foot, so that's not shchunas kvaros. Shchunas kvaros is when they're buried side by side. Matzah shosha echa yadu v'shnayim tchila. If they found three, one of them was known, two of them were discovering for the first time, oh shnayim tchila v'shnayim yaduim, or, and now the girsa over here probably should be, it's corrected on the side of the Gemara, one for the first time, two we already knew about, that does not have the halacha of tfus or shchunas kvaros, meaning all three of them have to be found. So now Rabbi Yishave found two, which was everybody knew about, and then there was one that we found there for the very first time. He thought now we could zone the area as a Jewish burial plot. Rabbi Kiva says no. In other words, that was a lot of work on your part, but no, it's all in vain. So either. The three of them are known, or the three of them are discovered for the very first time. But here, 2 + 1 does not equal 3. Meaning, if two were known and one was discovered for the first time, that does not make it a shchunas kvaros. Again, hard to understand why that should be, but... Agreed. Hard to understand why that should be, and again, we could file this under Tosfos' point earlier, that maybe it's just halach, it's part of halach lamoshe misinai. Okay, no lan ve'es tfus asan. Okay, when, again, the first point the Mishnah made is that if you find a body buried on its own, nobody knew about it, but the circumstantial evidence indicates that it is a Jew, so what we could do is we could take the body out of the ground and reinter it in a Jewish burial plot. And the Mishnah told us that when we do so, we have to make sure to take out the tfusa as well. What is that? Here the Gemara discusses, hechidami tfusa, abravyuram akrav, and asasi unisasani mimitzrayim. Tol imi, take part of Egypt together with me. This is Yaakov's instructions prior to his death. He says, take me out of Egypt. But the pasuk reads, mi mitzrayim, meaning take a little bit of Egypt with me as well. When you bury me out of the ground, make sure to take some of the ground with me as well. And the rationale behind this is, if we can understand this, is that obviously in the decomposition, so some of the body goes into the ground, so therefore in order to make sure that you are digging up the entire body, so therefore you are not only going to take the actual burial spot, but you're going to take some of the ground as well. Vikama, only leading to the next question of the Gemara. And how much are we talking about? Shir Tfusa, Pirsh Rabbi Lazar, Notal Afer Tichuch, Vichofer Bebesula Gimel Atzbaos. So any of the ground that was dug up, for sure that you're going to take. And even some of the virgin soil that's surrounding the perimeter area of the burial. So there you're going to go 3 inches into the virgin soil around. So basically all the ground that was dug up in order to bury, plus another 3 inches around that area, 3 inches of the perimeter of that as well. And that is what's tfusa. Meisve, the Gemara is going to challenge this based on a brisa. V'kama shir tfusa. Here the brisa discusses exactly what shir tfusa is. Perish Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, no tells the kisamim, you take the wood chips, meaning back then the minhag, like it is in Chutz Laaretz, is to bury in a wooden coffin. So therefore the wooden coffin itself deteriorates, disintegrates. So but still there are going to be some wood chips. Take the wood chips. V'esa kisamot, v'zorek es avadayim, v'munach es asfekos. So anything which is definitively not part of the mace, that you could leave, but take everything which is a suffix. V'ashar mitzaref l'rov ben yanosho mace, u'l'rov atzamos l'malei tavid rekev. So, and the Brisa says, and basically in doing so, you're going to be making sure to take out all of the human remains. So, but the Brisa over here doesn't talk about the 3 inches around the perimeter of the virgin soil, and the Brisa doesn't mention that. So, who damer ki aitana? So the Gemara says, okay, but Rebbe Lazar, who was the one who gave us the shear, the Amora Rebbe Elazar, who gave us the shear, was following the following brisa. Ki aitana detanya, went on another brisa, v'kam shear tfusa, am Rav Yochanan Mishum ben Azai. So Rav Yochanan here is quoting ben Azai. So ben Azai is a Tana, a contemporary Rebbe Akiva. So Rav Yochanan is quoting ben Azai. I don't think it's a direct quote. Meaning, it's hard to imagine that Rav Yochanan ben Azai, almost impossible, that Rav Yochanan ben Azai lived in the same tkufa. Could be. I don't know. I have to think about that more. Anyway, sorry. I just got lost in that thought. So I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum ben Azai. No to offer tichuach v'chofer besula shalosh etzbaos. Oh, okay, good. So we see ben Azai says that you basically dig up all the earth that the body was buried in, and then even on top of that, another 3 inches around the perimeter of virgin soil, and that is the shear of tfusa. Bodek heimenu. The Mishnah talks about an investigation that you do. Ama Rava. Bodek ufana, badak ufana, badak ve'eshkach. So, let's say you do the following. Let's say you did an examination and you found a dead body and you dug up the dead body. Okay. And then you did it again. And then you did it again. So now, basically, what you just realized is that you dug up 3 bodies, meaning the discovery was not all 3 bodies at the same time. It was 1 body, you dug it up. It was the 2nd body, you dug it up. And it was the 3rd body, you dug it up. So now, right, it's a challenging issue. Because had you discovered all 3 bodies at the same time, so then Shechunas Kfara, so then it would have been zoned as a burial plot, a Jewish burial plot. Nobody would have been allowed to have touched it. But now that you dug up the bodies one at a time, so do we now revisit this situation and say, hey, if we would have discovered all 3 at the same time, that would have been a zoned area. So that's exactly what Rava is addressing. Bada Gufana. Bada gufana, bada ve'ashkach. So you did one, you found a body, you dug it up. You found a 2nd body, you dug it up. Now you found a 3rd body. So now, oh no. In other words, what do we say here? So that's right. I mean, that's correct. That is the that will be the reaction. And then what's going to be the halacha? So lo hai mefani le gabi hanach trei velo hai trei le gabi hai chad. So the first version of the discussion is that the once you took it out, so therefore we don't count them up together. Igad Amr, the Gemara has a slightly different version of this discussion. Amr Rav, Kevin Shanas, and Rishos Lefanos, Mefan Lahon. So since we have the since you had the right at the time to dig it up, so the Gemara says that's fine. Vilashavin Shchunas Kvaros. The Gemara asks the obvious question, which is, and why aren't we going to make the Shchunas Kvaros? Meaning, okay, each one in its time you had the right to take it up. But look, you know, once you found the third body over there, you know it was the Shchunas Kvaros, and you know that had we discovered all three at the same time, it would have been a Shchunas Kvaros. So why is it okay now that I took one body out, I took the second body out, and now, even though we found the third body, it's not given the status of Shchunas Kvaros. I'm Reish Lakish, Ila Matsu, V'tiaru Eretz Yisrael. So Reish Lakish says, look, the answer basically is, it's a good question, but look, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael and Taharas Eretz Yisrael, meaning part of the difference of Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz, and we talked about this idea earlier in the Masechta as well, is that in Eretz Yisrael we know where everyone's buried. And the reason why it's so important to know that is because we're so concerned about Tumat Tahara, and we need to know where the cemetery is and where the cemetery isn't. And we want most of Eretz Yisrael to be Tahor. And yes, it's true, had we found all three at the same time, it would have been Shchunas Kvaros. But now that we took one body out, we took the second body out. So now, yes, you could revisit this situation and say, hey, this is a burial plot. But on the other hand, the mitigating factor is, this is Eretz Yisrael. We want Eretz Yisrael to mostly be Tahor. So what we're going to do is we're going to remove the third body as well. We're going to basically clean up the area. Clean up the area meaning make it a Makam Tahor. And that's a mitigating circumstance, and that's why we're not going to revisit this and call this a Shchunas Kvaros. That's Reish Lakish's explanation. But
I was removed from the permanent place in the right-hand
again, when there are mitigating circumstances, covered a mace. So when there are mitigating circumstances, you could do so. In other words, if they feel like we would not have been taken care of in, you know, where he was buried. So Baruch Maestrim Amma, just on a personal note, I went to go visit my my great-grandfather, buried in Newark, New Jersey. So the cemetery is a disaster. Just a disaster. So it's hard to imagine. I mean, it's New Jersey. It's not, you know, not Iraq, but the disaster. So, I'm not going to do anything, but I'm saying, but if you know that, you know, that the mace is going to be compromised where it is, so that's a mitigating circumstance. So, Balik Master Mamba Velomatsa Mai. So, you search 20 Amas and then and you didn't find anything. So, Amarav Nashva, Yermi Amarav Shkunas Kvaros. So the Girsa of the Gemara is a little bit difficult, but the Girsa of the Gemara is that Shchunas Kvaros. Okay. So in other words, not the area that was undiscovered, but obviously the area that was discovered. So my time, I'm Reish Lakish, Ila Matzu V'Tiaros Eretz Yisrael. This line of Reish Lakish does not seem to fit in right now on this point of the Gemara. Because the point that Reish Lakish was making was, any excuse that we can to be Matar Eretz Yisrael, we're going to be Matar Eretz Yisrael. And how does that addressing our the most recent point of the Gemara? Well, you did your search, you couldn't find anything 20 amas away. So then what? Well, the area you did find is going to be Shchunas Kvaros. And then what is Reish Lakish? What is Reish Lakish doing? Coming to, right? His position is any chance we get, we're going to get me Matar Eretz Yisrael. Once an area is described as Shchunas Kvaros, there's nothing you could do. That area now is zoned and plotted as a Jewish burial plot. So it's hard to understand the Rush. In fact, so bothered by this question, says that this line of Gemara doesn't belong over here. Meaning, Reish Lakish's position was good for the previous point that we made, that if I took out one, I took out second, I found a third, now what do you do? So Reish Lakish's point is, you take the third out as well. Because we want to be Matari Eretz Yisrael. Good. That fits Reish Lakish's line. On this last Gemara that we just read, it doesn't fit in so well. Okay, let's just quickly finish up to the next Mishnah. Once again, we are off track. We're not learning Hilchos Nazir right now. We are just moving along in the world of Tumah Tahara. And the reason why we're doing so is, once again, because Chazaka. Meaning the... Now, two Mishnahs ago, and the most recent Mishnah we just learned today. And this Mishnah is going to be talking about Chazaka, Cheskas Tumah, and so that's what the Mishnah is doing here as well. Kol Safik Nagayim B'Tchila Tahor. If you have Safik Nagayim, okay, so B'Tchila, meaning we have not yet, the Kohen has not yet given an affirmative diagnosis that this person is a Metzora, so now, and there's any type of Safik, we're going to be Mako. So Anshalo Nizkak L'Tumah. Misha Nizkak L'Tumah Sveiko Tameh. But once the Kohen has rendered a Hora'ah, a ruling, that this is Saras, so at that point going forward, any Suffolk that comes up after that, so we're going to be Machmir. And over here, the explanation of the Mishnah is very simple. Chazaka. Meaning we work along with general assumptions and presumptions, and when you have a suffix attacking a chazaka, so once you have an established chazaka, so the suffix is not going to affect it. On the other hand, if the Kohen rendered him a mitzora, so now his chazaka is the other direction. The chazaka is he's a mitzora, and now if there's a suffix after that, we're going to default back to the chazaka, which is that he's a mitzora, and therefore he's going forward as a mitzora. Wait one moment, because the Gemara is going to address. The Torah says to be mitar, to be mitame. So you see that when the Torah is talking about the diagnosis of a mitzora, it says litaro litamo, putting what in front of what? Tahara is in front of tuma. Ho pasach ba kasa b'tahara tchila. So since the Torah describes tahara first, so therefore we always trend towards tahara. Okay. The Gemara says, look, if your trend is always going to be towards Tahara, so what difference does it make what his Chazaka is? Meaning, let's say the Kohen rendered him a Mitzora Mukhlat. He's a definitive Mitzora. And now, for reasons which we have not articulated, we have serious suspicion that he's no longer a Mitzora. Again, the circumstances, the examples, whatever they may be. Right now, let's just talk in the real abstract. But we have now a suffix that he's not a Mitzora. So I go back to the Pasuk in the Torah, and the Torah says, L'tara o l'tama. Clearly the Torah, what's our agenda? Our agenda is first to be Matar. And if we can make an argument that he's Tar, so we should make an argument that he's Tar. So the Gemara says, okay, point well taken, you're right. That drasha that we just quoted is not going to be discussing our Mishnah, but rather what is it going to be discussing? The following: Im Baharis Kadma LaSeir Lavan Tame, Vim Seir Lavan Kadma LaBaharis Tahor. Okay, so in just but one example of proper diagnosis of a mitzora and determination that a person is in fact a mitzora, so if the white spot comes before the white hair, so the person is Tame. The Im Seir Lavan Kadma LaBaharis Tahor. And if the white hair comes before the white spot, so then he's tar. Okay, so in other words, you look in an area of skin, and you see that the skin is white, you see that the hair there is white as well. So here, in order to render the person a mitzora, you have to know which one came white first. Was it the hair, or was it the skin? Now, let's imagine, very simply, that the person comes over to the Kohen, and both hair and skin are both white, we just don't know which one came white first. What do we do there? Okay, good. Here we go. So, Safek Tamei, Rabbi Yoshua Amar Kia. So, if it's a Safek, meaning he goes over to a Kohen, white skin, white hair, just he doesn't know, and the Kohen certainly doesn't know which one came first. What do you do? So, the Tanakhama says Tamei. Rabbi Yoshua says Kiha. What does that word mean? My Kia. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. I'm a Rav. I'm a Kra. Litaro. Did I skip a line? Yes, I did. I'm Rav Yehuda, Kia Vitahor. Kia literally means blanches. It pales. It's basically, we ignore it. Meaning, he's Tahor. So the Gemara says, Viduma Kia Vitame. How do I know that? Maybe Kia means Tame. So now let's say it. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav. I'm a Kala, Taro, Latamo. Ho, Pasach, Bo, Kasa, Vitara, Tchila. Oh, so that's where we're going to apply the Pasuk in the Torah. Here where we do not know. And he comes over to us in a chazaka of being Tahor, or Tahor. And he's showing us now the skin. And the skin is white and the hair is white, but we simply have no idea which one became white first. Was it the hair? Was it the skin? So now he approaches the Kohen. So now the Kohen says, Tahor, according to Rabbi Yoshua. And That's what Rabbi Yoshua meant when he said Kia. And what's the basis for that? That's the pasuk of the Taro, the Tamo. That's what the Torah is talking about. But in terms of the Mishnah, if the Kohen rendered the person to be a Metzora Mochlat, so from that point going forward, now the Chazaka is that he's a Metzora. So now, if there's a Suffolk after that point in time, so then that Suffolk is not going to change the original presumption. No. In other words, there was no chazaka, meaning you may or may not have come into contact with tumah, and there, in fact, just the other way. In other words, you're tahor, and you may or may not have come into contact with tumah. Here, once the kohen rendered the person a mitzara, now he has a chazaka of being a tummy. And now, in order to extract himself from that, so you have to go through the tahor process, and a suffix is not going to be enough for extraction. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up in the Mishnah. Tomorrow, the last day of the Masechta. Tomorrow, one more Mishnah in the world of Tumah Tahara. And then the last Sugya, which is short. It's a short daf tomorrow. Nazir Shmuel. Nazir Shmuel becomes our big topic for tomorrow. Rabbi Chanani Menachash Marzak Zbach Zachis Olich Achir Bem Torah Mitzvah Shenemar Nachafetz Amantziko Yagdil Torah V'Yadir.